the functions that would exist in any other industry exist in Web3. So we need marketers, we need event organizers, but we also need, you know, accountants and tax specialists and lawyers and, you know, chief operation officers. Any other function you can think of in a company is also needed in this world.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. Last week on the podcast, we had a Careers in Web3 and AI masterclass hosted by yours truly. And this week, we've got another masterclass style session with our esteemed guest, Helen Disney. She's going to tell you everything you wish you knew about blockchain and Web3, but we're too afraid to ask. Helen is the CEO and founder of Unblocked, and she's brilliant at making Web3 make sense. I think that's partly her journalistic background, so she's always had to be good at packaging things up so they make sense to a really broad audience. So if you're early in your learning journey, I hope you find this episode really useful and you take lots of notes. So without further ado, here's Helen. Welcome to the show, Helen.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm really excited for today's session because you and I spoke on a panel together at the NED, part of Soho House recently, and I just thought you were brilliant at breaking this stuff down, making so much sense of blockchain, Web3, crypto, all of it, and you were just explaining it in words, in ways I hadn't heard before. So I'm hoping that today's session or today's episode will be almost like this sort of mini masterclass of everyone's burning questions answered. So I think this is even going to be good for like our podcast SEO when people are thinking like, okay, what is Web3? What is blockchain? What is crypto? They're going to end up here. So, and if you have Googled that, then you are in the right place. But before we jump into some of the sort of definitions and how you understand the world of blockchain and Web3, I first want to know about your career history, because you started out as a journalist, which it feels like is at the heart of your approach to all things blockchain, is that you kind of, you seek to make sense of this stuff and communicate that out in a way that makes sense to other people. You've also been the founder of a think tank, and you're now advisor to multiple different companies and the founder of Unblocked, which makes blockchain accessible to non-technical people, which I really like. And so how have you sort of ended up taking this path? It's a you know, bit of a mixed bag. So tell me more.
It is, I think. I used to say I had a random CV, but I now slightly embellish that and say I've got an interdisciplinary approach to things, because I think actually when I look back, everything I've done has informed the other things that I've done, but I didn't necessarily appreciate that at the time. I sort of seized on opportunities of things I thought were interesting and kind of ran towards them without necessarily a coherent idea of why I was doing that. But I'm glad that you said my way of looking at this was maybe a bit different. And I think part of the reason for that is I did come from that journalistic background. I didn't come from a finance career or, you know, from a tech background. I'm not a developer. So when I first, about 10 years ago, heard about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and then also started to understand that the underlying technology of blockchain was important in its own right, I wanted to try to explain that to other people. And people would come to me and ask me, well, what is it you're doing now? What is Bitcoin? What is blockchain? You know, people maybe didn't even realize they were part of the same thing. And so I'd gone and asked a lot of questions myself, which I guess is my journalistic brain, to try to understand, because I think unless you can understand something yourself, it's very difficult to explain it to other people. So I kept on coming across more and more questions. And that was really why I got so embedded in the world of cryptocurrency and blockchain, is I never could quite answer all my questions. And every time I thought I'd understood it, a new kind of twist to the technology would come along. And I think that's still happening. I mean, the levels of waves of innovation that have happened are kind of nonstop. So, you know, now we talk about Web3, which is a term that was, you know, not really used until a couple of years ago, quite widely. So, you know, this set of technologies is changing the entire way that we will kind of interact and transact online. And that's, you know, part of what Web3 is. But for me, it started out with the coming across Bitcoin in a conference and thinking, okay, well, how can I unpick this and explain it to other people?
And how did that come together?
So yeah, it happened a little bit by chance. I had a friend who I knew from the think tank world who had been asked to do fundraising and programming for a conference that was being run by the Bitcoin Foundation, which is a nonprofit that was set up to help fund the development of the Bitcoin core protocol, because Bitcoin is an open source project. So it's not a company, it's not owned by anybody. So how do you fund it? You have to fund the developers in some way to work on it. And the Bitcoin Foundation wanted to do an event in Europe that would sort of bring Bitcoin to a more mainstream audience. And I mean, interestingly, you know, we're still trying to explain it to people from outside of the tech world. But the idea was to sort of get people there from politics and law and banks and businesses who, you know, might never have really heard of Bitcoin or who maybe were just starting to explore it and kind of help build relationships with those people, help them understand what the technology was and realize that it was going to have this sort of fundamental impact on our world. And that was quite a tall order for me because I myself didn't know that much about Bitcoin at the time. So I ended up having to do programming for a sort of 3-day event where 1,000 people came to Amsterdam and talked nonstop about different aspects of Bitcoin, right from the history of money and sort of monetary theory through to what Bitcoin mining is and, you know, the regulatory and policy impact of having cryptocurrency and, you know, a whole range of other different things that were being talked about in those days as the ecosystem was very young. And so, yeah, that was really my baptism of fire that I had to try and find people that would be good speakers and I had to put on content that I thought people would enjoy. So I got to, you know, have the great opportunity to meet a lot of the early entrepreneurs and people in the industry and ask them all my questions. So I was very lucky in that respect.
That's awesome. And so, okay, which case the million-dollar question, what is Bitcoin and how does it work? Because I know that when we spoke on the same panel together, I thought you were great at describing cryptocurrency, the sort of how it works and why it needs to exist and why you need sort of incentivization in place. Feel free to bring in the whole history of money based on what you're saying about
it. I probably won't do that. But yeah, I mean, Bitcoin at its basic is digital money. But, you know, people might think we have digital money today because they can go out and use their phone and, you know, pay contactlessly for something, getting on the underground or, you know, something in a shop. But what's underpinning that digital money is not what I call natively digital. So there's processes behind that, payment processes. It might be PayPal, it might be Google Pay, it might be Apple Pay, or it might be a bank who are doing the underpinning payments technology underneath that. What Bitcoin allowed was us to be able to directly transact with one another, what's called peer-to-peer. So a bit like you had, you know, music file sharing, which we all understand now, but we didn't then, you know, that you could suddenly share a song with somebody over the internet. Same process was developed, but for money. And that's actually quite a difficult thing to do because you need to have trust online. So when I transact with you, it's not the same as us sharing a song, because if we both have a copy of the same song, the song still exists. But if you and I both have the copy of the same money, one of us is in trouble because we can only have one piece of that money. And I should have transferred it to you or you should have transferred it to me. So the clever part of Bitcoin really was the creation of the crypto part of the cryptocurrency. So it's an online currency, but it's secured by cryptography. And that's what really allows us to prevent double spending online. So it can't be that I can send that same Bitcoin to another person while at the same time as I'm sending it to you. And the blockchain part is the way that we actually keep track of all the transactions that happen. So that allows us to know provably that the transaction's taken place, what time they took place, and that, you know, they're in a particular order that then can't be edited and changed. So that's the other important part of blockchain, is that you have this immutability or this kind of transparency that means we actually all know what's happened. And again, it's another sort of mechanism that builds this kind of online trust.
And where would you see Web3 interplaying with all of this? Like you said, as you pointed out, Web3 has only been the term that people use about this stuff in the last couple of years-ish, as sort of saying that blockchain and its various abilities represent a whole new phase of the internet. I mean, is that how you would tend to describe it? Like, I suppose, do you tend to use the term Web3? And also, out of interest, what reaction does it prompt when you do?
Well, it's interesting. I think people have very different interpretations of what Web3 is. And I think at the moment, there's not a clear, I mean, we just talked about consensus. There's not necessarily a clear consensus of what it is. But I think people that are in the world of cryptocurrency and blockchain and other what I call frontier technologies like AI, have a feeling and a sort of belief that, you know, there are things about the current internet that are broken. So it might be that, you know, companies kind of harvest our data in order to sell things back to us, or it might be that, you know, payments are expensive. There are various things that are sort of wrong with today's internet that potentially these technologies can improve. And if you think about the phases of the internet, you know, phase one, it was a bit like you sort of put your company brochure online, you know, and it was just static and you just sort of stuck the brochure online and it was just a digital version of your thing that you would have handed out in the waiting room of your office. And then sort of phase two was suddenly, you know, you were actually able to kind of do some commerce online. So, you know, you had Amazon and you had, you know, other websites that allowed you to pay for things and buy things. And, you know, you were starting to kind of have e-commerce. And I suppose Web3 is for me sort of two things. One is it's kind of de-commerce rather than e-commerce. So it's sort of decentralized commerce. So again, I'm not needing that middleman in order for me to transact and be part of a kind of blockchain network. I can just join at any time if I want to and find somebody else on the other end of the transaction. And also that it's the combination of these technologies converging and coming together at once, because what's happened is cryptocurrency has evolved a lot from Bitcoin to now we have thousands of different cryptocurrencies with different sort of features and risks and purposes. And we have potentially the ability to link into some of the other technologies with those. So if you think about a supply chain, for example, if you have blockchain in a supply chain, you can bring lots of disparate parts of the supply chain together. So it might be a company that's sending goods from one place to another. It might be the customs officials. You know, it might be various different things you need in order for goods to be transported. But you can also add in Internet of Things technology to keep track of the quality of the goods as they're on their way. And that data can be sort of accessed on the blockchain as well. So if you're transporting some bananas, let's say, and they're at the wrong temperature and they might spoil, you know, that information could be available. And then the person buying that shipment might decide, well, actually, I want to change my mind and buy a shipment from another company. So you can sort of see how, you know, it's the blockchain is in a way the foundational sort of substrate or the underlying sort of basis for then other things to be added and built on top. And the combination of those things is very powerful, because suddenly you can add a lot of value and a lot of innovation in different areas that would be very tricky to do if you were just doing things in a centralized way. And I suppose I didn't talk that much about decentralization or you know, distributed ledgers, but a distributed ledger is sort of another phrase for a blockchain. You can have distributed ledger technologies that aren't blockchains, but to not complicate things too far, you know, a blockchain is a form of distributed ledger. And so everyone who is involved in that audit trail, that ledger, can see it from wherever they are, whether they're a company or they're another organization. So you don't have to all be working in one centralized organization with a top-down IT system to take part in it. And I think that's the part that allows collaboration in a way that we didn't have before.
Mm-hmm. And just sort of winding things back a notch for the sort of more beginner audience, what is it that when you describe blockchain, what really resonates with a sort of more beginner audience, they're kind of just getting to understand this stuff? Is there like an analogy that you tend to lean on, or like, why do you find it so compelling, or why do, you know, people that you're speaking to, what is it that wins them over when you're talking about this stuff?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the bank statement analogy sort of works when you're thinking about money, because everyone can sort of understand, well, look, when I send money, I sort of check my online statement and I see, you know, the payments and the transactions that I've made. But I jokingly heard someone once say it's like a giant world clock, you know, which is sort of a funnier version of the same thing. But I think for me, blockchain is more like a network for incentivizing people working towards a common purpose. So that's the best way that I describe it. So it might be that you created a blockchain to incentivize people to use solar energy, and people could sell excess solar power from the grid to other people in a, you know, small network on their local street who maybe needed additional energy and didn't have it. So there's a sort of incentive structure in place. And because blockchain networks, you can have what's sometimes called a token, is another sort of name for a cryptocurrency, but you can have small amounts of money. It could be micro payments that can easily take place. You can start to incentivize people financially to contribute and be part of that network. And I think that's something really different that didn't really exist before blockchain. So let's say you had a network that was to do with, you know, browsing the internet. I mean, there's you know, blockchain-based browsers that exist, you might get incentivized for be willing to share some of your data. So now we just go on a browser and we give all our data away for free and companies sell stuff to us. But it might be that you say, well, I want to browse only in purely private mode and I'm happy not to get any payment for that because I'm just going to have my privacy. But you might say, okay, actually, I don't mind if people see what books I'm reading, but that's valuable information for somebody else. So you might get some micropayments for being willing to give away some of your data. So you can sort of see how that then allows people to kind of contribute to these networks at different levels according to their preferences, and how collectively, if lots of people are doing that and contributing to a network with a similar purpose, that you can build kind of incentive structures for social and economic change that never really existed before.
That's really, really helpful. And I think for a lot of beginners and is it up to the sort of intermediate people in our listenership, I think they'll find it really helpful is just the kind of laying out of, yeah, how does this stuff work and how does it interconnect? But thinking specifically about you and your own role and what you do every day, what does Unblocked do and who are you aimed at? And do you have like a typical project or way that you work with companies?
So we've evolved a lot, actually. When I first started Unblocked, it was for two reasons. One was that I went to a lot of events and I found that they were, you know, not really sort of professional events. They were people with a shared interest coming together at kind of informal meetups and things. And I met a lot of great people at those events, but there weren't very many events that brought people from outside the tech world in and did what I would sort of call a kind of like professional level of conference organization in terms of, you know, pulling together the content and just the organization of the day, partly because it was just something very new and people didn't have budget. So I wanted to organize events where I would take a particular vertical sort of theme in blockchain or go into a whole day of what's happening in blockchain and healthcare, for example, and bring people from traditional healthcare backgrounds. So maybe from the NHS or from pharmaceutical companies or from healthcare insurance into the room with the promising blockchain startups that were building solutions and connect them together, because I just thought there was a sort of magic that would happen if we brought these people together. So that was sort of the original idea. And through that, to be able to educate people, you know, a bit like the conversation we're having now about, well, it's not just about cryptocurrency and people have certain, you know, views about cryptocurrency, which can be negative and, you know, those can be justified. You know, there is a lot of fraud and scams that go on with cryptocurrency. So getting people to understand that there's a broader kind of Web3 blockchain world that's not necessarily to do just with cryptocurrency. So that was sort of phase one. And I think where it's moved to now, we're 10 years on. So, you know, there are a lot more companies out there now, so many companies that are building new kind of business models and new projects with blockchain and with tokens. So what I do now is I work with companies to tell their stories more effectively. So, you know, different ways of doing marketing through content. So it might be podcasts, it might be blogs, it might be industry reports, it might be working on their event strategy because they're going to market and they need to navigate where would be the best place for me to actually find my customers or partners or investors. And then also because I've now come from the mainstream sort of business world and then also worked for 10 years in the kind of crypto and blockchain world, the network that I have crosses over both. So sort of being able to match make the right people together to help companies accelerate their growth. So I work in very different ways depending on who I'm working with. Sometimes I'm sort of like an outsourced marketing function for people. Other times I work on a specific report that helps them position themselves strategically around a particular subject area or educate their audience on a subject that they need help on. So a good example would be digital asset custody, where I'm working on a report right now. You know, custody exists in traditional finance, but digital asset custody has very different qualities to what you would perceive as custody in traditional finance. And so part of the role of the work that I'm doing is sort of educate people, well, what is digital asset custody? How is that different? And also how will that evolve as the world of tokens and sort of digital assets kind of evolves itself, what will be needed in the future if we're all going to own, you know, digital assets or tokenized, so sort of a digital version of a property, for example, how would I custody and keep that safe compared to what I would do now with the deeds to my house?
Because it does suddenly present a lot more, loads more challenges, especially with something like you say, like something as important as house deeds, if that's on the blockchain, how does that play in with being sort of totally open and transparent? Like, does that make you vulnerable? But actually, just a quick selfish question from me, which is, are you, like, the fact that you're saying you also sort of do the right connections between people, because I feel like that's the role that women of Web3 and sometimes me as Lauren, what I'm playing is being the connector of people. And like, I don't charge for that, but it also means that I don't, if I'm doing that stuff for free, then I don't actually have time to do my actual work. So like, do you charge for that? Like, what is the sort of business model for that?
It's a huge dilemma, actually. I've always connected people. It's just been something that I've always done. And at times I have got frustrated because it does take quite a bit of time to be a connector and to match the right people together. I think it's something that's very difficult to charge for, you know, on a sort of day-to-day basis. It's just something you need to decide that you want to do. But I think in the long run, it pays for itself, because what it does is it allows you to build really strong connections with other people. You know, you introduce somebody to somebody, they benefit from it. And obviously you have to be choosy of who you introduce to who. It's not just a sort of scattergun thing. You have to really think about how you're sort of matching people up. But, you know, when I look for speakers for the events, which I do charge people for curating events and things like that, I know the right people to ask because I've made all these connections and I've got to know the people. And also they're willing to do me a favor because I did them a favor at some point. So it monetizes itself, but in an intangible way. That's the best way I can put it, I think.
Mm, that's definitely really helpful. And I feel like, yeah, all of this stuff is a bit of a moving target. And as you say, sometimes the value in terms of connecting people up in Web3 blockchain business generally is you're creating real value there. Like, say if somebody that I really trust recommends somebody to me to go on the Women of Web3 podcast, I will actually sort of go and research that person if it's come from somebody I really trust their recommendation. So
yeah, I think I did used to make the mistake in the past of just, if someone would ask me to be introduced to somebody, I would just do it because, you know, I was being a bit of a people pleaser maybe. And I thought, well, they've asked me, so I suppose I should do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm much more particular about, okay, well, would it be worthwhile for me to introduce this person to this person? Would they actually value it? You know, would it be worth my time to do it? Or is it not really the right link? You know, not necessarily against the person who's asking, but just maybe it's not a good enough fit, because that sort of then devalues the currency of the other recommendations I'm going to make.
Exactly.
And so I do have to think carefully about who I'm going to match with who, and will it be a good fit? Will there be any conflict of interest with anything? Will they get on? So all those things sort of play into my mind when I make a connection. And I mean, there are some examples where you can monetize those connections. So, I mean, if you're obviously referring someone who's a potential sponsor for an event or potential client, you know, you can have a referral agreement and, you know, you can agree a percentage for referring people. So, you know, there are times when you can monetize those connections, but I think for me, it's more about, it's just something I've chosen to put out into the world, and actually gives me a lot of pleasure when I see, oh, so-and-so and so-and-so I introduced and they went off and wrote a book together. Or, you know, I see some project that's happened and I think, well, I wouldn't have had time to do all of that myself, but I'm happy that those people met and, you know, there's sort of some creative juices got flowing and you know, something came out of it.
Mm. I think that's also what people like about Women of Web3 events is the people that they meet there. They then often find a sort of Web3 buddy and like somebody to go and learn together with. And then, yeah, inevitably they do then sort of start projects together or start some kind of side hustle or, yeah, something. And yeah, there's something really valuable in those connections. So I wanted to take things back to sort of how you can basically make money or have a career in the blockchain space. What kind of careers would you say exist, or even like maybe what are you pointing people towards if people are asking you that question?
I think it's changed a lot. So when I first came into the industry, you know, it was small and it was largely startups or scale-ups. So you had founders who were generally kind of technical people and you had developers who were building the technology. And there wasn't much in the middle. You know, the companies were not large enough or established enough or well-funded enough to have anybody else doing the other functions. I think that has radically changed. And I would say more or less now, all of the functions that would exist in any other industry exist in Web3. So, you know, we need, obviously I'm a marketer, you know, and a PR person. We need marketers, we need event organizers, but we also need, you know, accountants and tax specialists and lawyers and, you know, chief operation officers and, you know, any other function you can think of in a company, you know, is also needed in this world. I mean, there may be some different elements. So I think Web3 marketing is very different from kind of traditional sort of Web 2 marketing, if you like, and some of the functions that you might have in one, you wouldn't necessarily have in the other, or they would operate in a different way that might be more decentralized. Community management and things is very different in Web3, for example, because it's a lot to do with things like developer communities and encouraging people, again, incentivizing network effects for people to use your blockchain network, because the more people use it, the more sort of valuable it becomes. So, you know, there are nuances, but I think pretty much any function you can think of, if you want to perform that function, the best thing you can do is just to start learning about Web3 and learning, you know, what the different companies do and thinking about where you might fit. I also think the industry will benefit from more people coming in who are not from Web3, because, you know, the skills that exist out there are now needed in a way that they maybe weren't before. So something like chief operations officer, you know, you didn't have companies that were big enough to need somebody operational and to put in all the systems and, you know, the HR function and, you know, the for sort of playbook for how you onboard a new employee and things like that. But, you know, now we've got quite a lot of medium-sized companies, and actually the companies that are mid-size, which is often where I work, really struggle with that. They were fine when they were two or three people and they were a small startup. And obviously if they get to be very big, then they can hire all kinds of people and have much bigger hiring budgets. But the ones that are sort of medium-size, that's actually the most sort of painful part of growing the company. And that's often where I end up working, because marketing and business development are quite intertwined. And so it's sort of at the stage where people are really, you know, they've maybe got a bigger round of funding, investment, or their, you know, product is taking off. And then they've got to adjust to the fact that they're not just a sort of mom and pop shop anymore. You know, they're now much bigger and they don't necessarily have they've got great technical experience. They maybe don't have the experience in the business side of how to actually grow the company, or also how to explain what they do without using all the tech jargon, which is kind of where I come in.
Mm-hmm. It is really quite hard to talk about anything in Web3 without resorting to further jargon. But where would you suggest that people go and learn more? Like, do you have a few favorite learning resources or ways that you stay up to date?
So I do follow various newsletters and podcasts and things. I really like Simon Taylor's FinTech Brain Food, which is more FinTech focused. That comes out every Sunday, which is quite a good day for a newsletter, because you actually have time to sort of potentially read it on a Sunday afternoon when you're not doing a day job. And I've always really enjoyed Anthony Day's podcast, which is called Blockchain Can't Save the World. Because what he does is very similar to what I do. He's a sort of educator, and he finds examples of real world blockchain projects and gets the people involved in them to come on the podcast and sort of talk about how blockchain is being used in different sectors, you know, in telecoms or in health, or, you know, places where maybe people wouldn't expect, or even kind of social impact projects and things like that. So I really enjoy that. And I mean, there are a lot of books and even courses out there now for learning about these technologies. So if you do want to learn, I think there's plenty that you can find. Probably the hardest thing is weaving through all the kind of YouTube videos of people, you know, telling you how to do crypto trading, or supposedly telling you how to do crypto trading, and finding something that you can sort of trust as a good resource. But I really enjoyed Blockchain Revolution when that came out. That was Don Tapscott's book, which sort of set out kind of what blockchain was and how it would be impactful on the world. And I think his son Alex has just recently done a Web3 book of a similar nature, sort of explaining kind of what Web3 is. I think also joining networks is brilliant. So for me, like you said, you know, women of Web3, people find a sort of Web3 buddy, and it kind of helps them guide through the space. I found great value in being part of networks like the Bigger Pie, which is a group for expanding the voices of women in blockchain and helping women get on more panels and making sure we don't have too many manels, and also, you know, sharing resources about funding sources or job opportunities and all those kind of things. And I think, you know, what's nice about those groups is, again, they're connectors as well. So they connect you to others. So if you're looking for something, or you just want someone to tell you, well, look, how should I get started? Or go to an event with you because you don't know anyone there and you don't want to go on your own. You know, there's a lot of joy and sort of like professional support to be gained from being part of these networks.
Out of interest, where do they tend to share stuff? I know the Bigger Pie, so founded by Bridget Greenwood, but do they have like a Telegram group or a Discord, or do they do in-person events? I can't really remember.
They have done in-person events, yeah. There's a WhatsApp group and a Telegram group. There's various channels in the Telegram group split into different areas. So you can post about events and opportunities, and you can sort of segment because obviously the main group is quite large now. But it's also great that there are so many people in it, because when it started, it was a relatively small group. And now I definitely don't know all the people that are in there, but it's really great. And people will just throw ideas out there and ask for advice, or also say, you know, I'm going to be in Dubai for this event. Is anybody else going to be here so we can meet up? So if you're traveling abroad, again, as a woman, it's not always nice to travel alone. You can find someone else to meet up with in a foreign city, make new friends, which, I mean, you can never have too many friends, right? So that's also a nice facet to it.
Yeah. Oh, I really like that. And we have toyed with the idea of, like, yeah, do we do a WhatsApp group? Occasionally we get asked questions about have we got a Discord, and the answer is no. And actually, because the majority of our community are not asking for that. But yeah, something like WhatsApp or Telegram feels somewhat more manageable, but I think we probably are just a little bit too big to create real value, because I think those, as you say, it's sort of, you start off quite small and sort of everyone knows each other, and then you sort of build out from there. Whereas I'm worried that if we were to start a Women of Web3 WhatsApp, it might be a bit of a sort of random free-for-all.
Yeah, I think you have to segment it into different sort of channels. I think that tends to work best. So,
yeah,
you know, sometimes people just ask for marketing support because they're doing something and they want you to, you know, sort of chime in and comment about it, which helps everybody kind of boost their kind of social profile. Or, you know, someone's doing an event, they're looking for a speaker and they want suggestions. So there's a lot of different kind of elements to it. But as long as you're in the right sort of parts of the channel, then you don't get too bombarded with all of the general chit chat.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, some days you're too busy with your day-to-day work and you have to switch it off because you've got too much else to do and you don't want it pinging every 5 minutes. But usually I like to be in there and kind of seeing what's going on.
Oh, I think actually most WhatsApp groups I'm in, regardless of what they're connected to, I think I'm muted. In fact, even my neighbour WhatsApp is on, you know, you can do mute forever.
Yeah, well, the family one, I mean, that's the worst.
Oh my God.
Not my family, obviously, but you know.
No, not at all. So just to finish on then, have you got a helpful strategy or tip that you might want to share with our listeners of something that's got you to where you are today, whether it's going to be, you know, broadly in the blockchain space, or like an approach that has, or even a motto that's kind of guided you through, or like to where you are today?
I think there's two things. One is stay curious and don't be afraid to ask questions, because I genuinely think this industry is so new that there are no stupid questions, and it's not too late to ask the most basic questions around just what is Bitcoin, what is blockchain, what is Web3. You know, these are all questions that the vast majority of people still couldn't give a coherent answer to because it's not part of their day-to-day life. So it's not a stupid thing to ask, and don't feel embarrassed to ask it, because you've got to kind of get a handle on that before you can branch out into going deeper into something else. And the other one is, you know, do try to sort of maximize opportunities. So if I think back to my entry into this world, you know, I joined a Bitcoin conference. It was just meant to be a 6-month contract. You know, I was going to do the programming and help with the fundraising on this event, and then it was going to end. But I got very sort of embedded in it and involved in it, and it led to me actually being offered a full-time job with the foundation who ran the event. And then because of that, I then started a business. And I never thought, when I took the conference on, I just thought, well, that sounds like kind of an interesting, intriguing opportunity. I'll kind of go for it, even though I don't know anything about it. It's led to a decades-long career in something that I never thought would be my world. You know, I never thought I would be a sort of a fintech person or a tech person. And in a way, I'm still not, but I have a function in the industry, which is being this explainer and this storyteller and this communicator. And my kind of linguistic background, I did a languages degree and journalism. That kind of facility with words allows me to be in this world and have a very useful function, I think, of bridging between technology and sort of most people in their day-to-day lives who don't, you know, necessarily know how to program or do coding or think about these things on a daily basis. But it will have an impact on our future jobs and our future, you know, way of shopping, and everything that we do will eventually, I think, be touched by Web3.
I really like that. And because you are, yeah, you're a translator. And I think people look to organizations like Unblocked and organizations like Women of Web3 to kind of play that role of, please, will you translate all of this jargon into kind of, okay, what value does it offer me or my business, or like, what does it actually mean in terms of impact on the world? So That's brilliant. Thank you. So lastly, Helen, where can people find you?
So I'm on LinkedIn. If you search Helen Disney, I think I'm probably one of the few Helen Disneys given my unusual surname. I'm also at H Disney on X or Twitter, as it used to be known. Or you can find me on my website, which is un-blocked.co.uk. So always happy to hear from people. If you've got more blockchain questions or you want to come to one of my events, then do get in touch.
Awesome. Well, I really enjoyed this. So I think people will find it really helpful. So thanks so much for your time.
Thanks very much, Lauren. It was great to chat to you.
Thanks for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. I've been your host, Lauren Ingram. Please do give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps more women, more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to come and join our talent collective and get your profile seen by potential Web3 employers, or you can choose to be anonymous if you prefer. If you're at a company that's looking to understand Web3 better, or you want to support women in this space, do get in touch with us on our website. And if you've got any questions, any comments, tweet us at womenofweb3co or find us on LinkedIn, and we'll see you next Tuesday morning.